This morning's reading is taken from the book of Exodus, chapter 17, verses 1 to 15. From the wilderness of Sin, the whole congregation of the Israelites journeyed by stages, as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. The people quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" But the people thirsted there for water, and the people complained against Moses and said, "Why did you bring us out of Egypt? To kill us and our children and livestock with thirst?" So Moses cried out to the Lord, "What shall I do with these people? They're almost ready to stone me." The Lord said to Moses, "Go on ahead of the people and take some of the elders of Israel with you. Take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. I will be standing there in front of you on the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock, and water will come out of it, so that the people may drink." Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. He called the place Massah and Meribah, because the Israelites quarreled and tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Then Amalek came and fought with Israel at Rephidim. Moses said to Joshua, "Choose some men for us and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses told him, and fought with Amalek, while Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. Whenever Moses held up his hand, Israel prevailed. And whenever he lowered his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands grew weary, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. Aaron and Hur held up his hands, one on each side and the other on the other side. I beg your pardon, one on one side and the other on the other side. So his hands were steady until the sun set. And Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the sword. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this as a reminder in a book, and recite it in the hearing of Joshua. I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven." And Moses built an altar and called it, "The Lord is my banner." He said, "A hand upon the banner of the Lord. The Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation." This is the word of the Lord.
How can God be so faithful to a people that is so faithless? I was asked that this week by somebody who's getting ready to do the Just 10 small group on the Ten Commandments. And this person, I thought, was reading Exodus, but this person's also reading Numbers and Deuteronomy. And he's looking at the behavior of the nation of Israel during the 40 years, and he says, how can God continue to be faithful to such faithless people? Jesus in the New Testament had trouble with his disciples. At one point, he got exasperated. He said, "You people of little faith, you little faiths." Paul, as he's preparing the church in Corinth, talks about the importance of being faithful. We're about to celebrate communion together. Paul in chapter 10 of 1 Corinthians. For I do not want you to be ignorant of the fact, brothers, that our forefathers were all under the cloud and that they passed through the sea. They ate the same spiritual food and drank the spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them, and that rock was Christ. Nevertheless, God was not pleased with most of them. He talks about the immorality. He talks about testing God repeatedly. And he talks about moaning and grumbling. How did it work for you last week? Remember our homework assignment? We were to pray before we protested. We were to pray before we complained. How many found that a really easy exercise? I didn't even last till Monday noon. Today, we're talking in a very interesting story, how Moses had to raise his arms. Now, this service raises their arms more for worship than the 8:45 or the 9:45. Would anyone be willing to raise their arms for this entire hour? No challenges. Okay. Well, we'll get to that story in a second. But Rephidim, where they gathered, three very significant things happened that we need to pay attention. Because as my young friend said after saying, hey, how faithless have been the nation of Israel, he said, I haven't always been faithful myself. There's things we can learn from this passage. We last left the nation of Israel at Elim, an oasis. 12 springs, palm trees, ideal situation. But then God moved the nation of Israel into the wilderness. And don't you love the name of the wilderness of sin? And then they came out of the wilderness of sin to Rephidim. And three things happened there in chapter 17 and 18 of the book of Exodus. The first thing is they're thirsty again. And so they complain again. This is a pattern. It's not just their pattern, it's my pattern. If you're honest, maybe your pattern. God provides, yay, God. Now I got a problem. Now I'm going to complain. And this time, they amp it up a little bit. We're told they complain and they quarrel. It's not just private mutterings. Now there's kind of a conspiracy going on against Moses. And Moses does the right thing. He prays, he says, hey, dear God, they want to stone me. They're pining for Egypt again. They think I brought them out into the desert so that they die of dehydration and thirst. And God tells Moses, take that staff, the staff that you held out that opened the Red Sea, remember that miracle? Hit the rock, and there was water. Now, how many engineers do we have with us in the sanctuary? Anybody an engineer? Oh, this is interesting. We had 7 engineers at the 8:45 service. Engineers get up earlier than the rest of us. Or maybe they're in the overflow here or one of the 2 overflows in the hotel. But I did a little research just because I thought engineers would ask, how much water would it take to slake the thirst? 11 million gallons of water a day. We're talking a serious supply of water. And they were satisfied. God again demonstrated that he provides. God provides. But then Moses said, we're going to name this place, and I'm not so interested in the Hebrew name, but I think the English name is a very interesting one. Moses named that place, is the Lord among us or not? Interesting name for a place. Is the Lord among us or not? But I think it's a question we have to ask as we go through life. Is the Lord with us or not? Other ways this question could be asked is God there? Or where is God? Or where was God? I was going through a difficult situation. My loved one was going through a difficult situation. Where were you, God? And we spend all sorts of time in what theologians call theodicy. How do you justify a good and powerful God in a world where there's evil and there's suffering? And even though God continued to provide, the nation of Israel was not very faithful. And before we're hard on them, what about us? Do we really believe that God provides? Well, no sooner had that first incident happened than the Amalekites came on a sneak attack. You see, if you have all this water and you're in the desert, then other tribes are going to say, hey, we want to get the resources that the Israelites have. They're just out of slavery. They're not very organized as an army. Let's have a sneak attack. Amalek, the Amalekites, we don't know much about them. They're quite mysterious. Every time they're mentioned in the Bible, they're against God. Then that's not a good thing, is it? Amalek, we think, was the grandson or great-grandson of Esau. Remember, Esau got the bad deal? And there was a family feud, and it festered, and hundreds of years later, there were two people who hated each other. They appear here. They appear when King Saul defeats them, and God says, wipe them out. And King Saul doesn't wipe them all out. And they keep reappearing at just the worst times. One of my favorite books of the Bible is Esther. Esther, the great hero. Who is the villain in the book of Esther? Haman. Kind of like Hitler. His job was to wipe out the Jews. And guess what tribe he was from? He was an Amalekite. So the Amalekites said, they're sitting ducks. All this water and resources is ours for the asking. So they unprovoked attacked. Now, I'm tempted to ask an American history question. And I'll ask the question without asking you to answer it. What do you think is the most studied and written about battle in American history? Surprise, surprise, most historians say it would be the Battle of the Little Bighorn or Custer's Last Stand. General George Armstrong Custer and the 7th Cavalry were certain they could defeat the Plains Indians, the Cheyenne and the Lakotas. And so a small number of troops went out as they had so many times and defeated the Indians, they thought. But there was a problem. The Lakota and the Plains Indians were led by an old man by the name of Sitting Bull, who had been a warrior in his time, but now he was old. You know how old he was? He was 42 years old. So he was no longer a war chief. He was kind of a holy man. He was the leader. And he came up with this really interesting strategy. And basically it was, we're not going to fight as individuals. We're going to fight as a group. And we're going to have some plans. And we're going to trick the troops. But he had a young war chief by the name of Crazy Horse. And so Custer and his troops rode to their death, completely obliterated by a young war chief and a seasoned veteran who was up on the hill watching the whole thing happen. The Amalekites come charging into the nation of Israel thinking this is going to be so easy. But Moses had fled to the hills. He's the old man. But he wasn't hiding. He was up in a position where he could pray and he could lift up his arms and ask God for victory. First time the young war chief is mentioned. His name? Joshua. Joshua and his army went out to meet the seasoned, nasty, anti-God Amalekites. And there was a horrendous battle. And as long as Moses held up his hands, Israel was winning. When he got tired, the Amalekites staged a comeback. So, Aaron, Moses' brother, and Hur, who just appears here, although his grandson was the person who would be the engineer and architect of the temple. Not the temple, excuse me, the tabernacle. But these two guys said, "Old man, sit down. Sit on this rock, and we're going to hold up your hands. And the victory belonged to the Lord." He used Moses, he used Joshua, but there was no way that they should have been able to defeat the Amalekites, and they did. This passage took on real meaning for me this week when I was coming from a meeting and got caught in one of these torrential downpours. I was in my suit and my favorite shoes, and my shoes were soggy. I was just miserable. I got on the MTR. It was jam-packed. When suddenly someone tapped my arm, and a young woman gave me her seat. And I said, "No, I should be giving you my seat. What are you doing? No, no. Please sit down." And so I sat down. And then an elderly woman, almost as old as me, reached into her purse and took not one, not two, but three tissues and gave them to me to dry off. And my stubborn pride was, well, this isn't so bad. I don't even know these people, and they're taking care of me. It felt good, to be honest. And Moses, who had so much of this mission of God on his mind, he had peers who were there to help him. And friends, that's what we have. There are people seated next to you and all around this area who really have your back. They want to lift up your arms. They want you to sit down, and they want to be part of what you're going through. God provides, and God protects. But you can't do it. He will do it, and he will use you, but he will use others. Wonderful victory. And then we go into chapter 18. Gavin, you're such a good reader. We should almost call you up to read. It's a great story of Moses gets visited by his father-in-law, Jethro. Now, be really honest, we're in church. How many of you really enjoy spending time with your in-laws? Okay. Okay. Well, it's good to know that we don't have many engineers, and we do have a lot of honest people in this. Okay. It's sort of, I'm here from the home office, I'm here to help you. So Jethro comes checking up. How are you taking care of my daughter? How are you taking care of the kids? How are you taking care of these 2 million people? Not very well. You're burned out. You're trying to do it all by yourself. Not physically, not spiritually possible. You need to delegate. You need to have some judges who take care of all these disputes for you. Now, let me be really honest, even though we're on live feed and this is the sermon that's going to get broadcast. While we were at 22A Kennedy Road, we thought we sort of had it figured out. And it took a certain number of people to make things happen, and we had that certain number of people. Now we move here, and our stance is, help! We need some more people. And some of you have stepped forward, and others of you are going to have an opportunity to step forward in really exciting ways. This is so good for us as a church. Look at Moses for a second. He had a mentor. He had Jethro. He followed his advice, and it was good advice, and he delegated. He had peers. He had Aaron, his brother, and Hur. They were there for him. They had his back. And then he had a young protege, Joshua. He was preparing the next generation. I think Patrick will agree, during the relocation process, a whole bunch of young people have emerged, and my goodness, are they impressive. I feel so excited about the next generation. This week, I had the privilege to go to a group of young union business people, and I was thrilled at how honest and authentic and passionate they are to make a difference in the marketplace for Jesus Christ. And you know what they're looking for? Mentors. And it's interesting that at Union we have three generations. How does God want to use you? Have you found your Jethro? Have you found your Aaron? Have you found your Joshua? One of the best-selling business writers is a guy by the name of John Maxwell, and he has a book called The Right to Leave. Lead, right to leave, right to lead. Must be the glasses. Yeah. When Moses fled Egypt, he probably thought he had risked and lost everything for nothing. But after 40 years, Moses had undergone the breaking and remaking process required for him to be used by God. He had gone from an arrogant child of privilege who thought he could deliver the Hebrews single-handedly to a man of God who was very humble, more than anyone else on the face of the earth. Numbers 12:3, Moses was the most humble person who ever lived. Leadership always has a cost. To be a leader, you may not be asked to leave your country or to give up all your possessions as Moses was, but you can be sure that leading others will always have a price. Moses is a great example of a leader. He was preparing the next generation even as he was leading the current generation. But it wasn't Moses, it wasn't Joshua, it was God who provided, who protected, and prepared. And that's the God we serve. And we can be faithless or little faiths, or we can humbly say, Lord, open my eyes. Surround me with Joshua's and Aaron's and Jethro's. And let me be, and let this congregation be, not what we have planned, but what you have planned, Lord. And I can't wait to see how God will demonstrate his faithfulness to us.